So to introduce Seth, Seth B. Winner founded Seth B. Winner Sound Studios in 1990, remastering projects for the New York Philharmonic, Minnesota Orchestra, Metropolitan Opera, Sony Music, Pavilion Records Limited, Crystal and Universal Records, and have earned 3 Grammy nominations and 1 honorable mention from Norris. From 1996 to 2004, he was co-chair with Gary Gallo of ARSC's technical committee and contributor to the CLEAR technical report concerning analog identification, conservation, and preservation. Recent preservation and remastering projects have been undertaken for the Cy Walter Archives, the Bach Aria Group, the Princeton Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Mark Laycock, the Schnabel Family Foundation, the Benny Carter and Benny Goodman collections housed at Rutgers University's Institute of Jazz Studies, and a 4-CD package from on the WHRA label, as well as a 2-CD set on the Bluebell label, devoted to Jussi Björling's American and Swedish radio broadcasts, both of which were sponsored by the American JB Society. He has also remastered the critically acclaimed Vocal Record Collection Society's annual issues since 1989. As a sound engineer at the New York Public Library for almost 25 years, he has supervised the preservation of such collections as the Voice of America, the National Orchestral Association, the Little Orchestra Society, Roberta Peters, Henry Cowell, and UB Blake. And he has also been the technical curator of the Toscanini collection since 1988. His presentation today is entitled Robert Johnson, a Centennial Celebration Reissue. Please join me in welcoming Seth B. Winner.
Good morning, everyone. What you're looking at is one of the 2 known photos of Robert Johnson that exists. There's possibly a third one, but we'll get to that. My participation in this important reissue has an interesting history. In early February 2011, Stephen Lasker informed me that he had just done transfers of all of the known published and unpublished 78 RPM sides of the blues legend Robert Johnson, whose centennial was going to be observed that May. He made the transits from discs supplied by Robert Johnson, expert and publisher of his music, Steve Levere. On the 100th anniversary of Johnson's birth, Sony would issue an all-encompassing centennial package that would include a 2-CD set of all his known recordings with extensive notes and a series of 10-inch 45 RPM vinyl dubs containing all of the issued 78 RPM sides with their original label art. Could I do the final noise reduction, de-click, de-crackle, removal, and editing to create the digital master needed for the production of the CD package? I hesitated. My expertise was primarily in classical music. Arturo Toscanini was my conducting hero. UC Björling was my favorite tenor. What did I know about a blues singer whose last recordings were made more than 75 years ago and were first reissued on LP in 1961 would influence such rock musicians as Eric Clapton, the Rolling Stones, Johnny Winter, and George Thorogood, as well as the bluesmen Muddy Waters and Elmore Jones? Well, it didn't take long for me to decide that this indeed would be an interesting challenge, to say the least. Having agreed, I had to contend with 2 impediments. First was that the promised delivery date for the masters was the first week in March. The second was almost a week in Philadelphia for the annual MLA conference. This left me precious little time to completing the project when promised. So as any seasoned, quote-unquote, mad scientist engineer would, I closeted myself in the studio for days at a time and got to work. This is 2 of the possibly known 3 photos of Robert Johnson. You may notice something that's extraordinary. Look at the length of his fingers, the hand, the spread on his hand, how long those fingers are, that he was able to do what he was to do humanly possible. Before I go into the technical details with examples of how I put this compilation together, let's hear 3 samples of the CD issue. Johnson's recordings were made over 4 sessions. The first 2 were in San Antonio, Texas on November 23rd and 27th, 1936. The 3rd and 4th occurred in Dallas on June 19th and 20th, 1937. First, you'll hear Kind-Hearted Woman Blues Take 1, which was made at the first session. The source is a commercial shellac disc. Then, if I had possession over Judgment Day, which comes from the second session, that is from a vinyl pressing. And finally, From 4 Until Late, recorded at the third session, which is also from a shellac disc. Track one, please. These three because they show Johnson's versatility as a performer. I happen to prefer the recordings from the 1937 Dallas sessions because his singing is more intimate than in the San Antonio sessions of the previous year. A closer microphone pickup in Dallas captures his voice more successfully. The second selection clearly demonstrates how quiet a vinyl pressing can be in comparison to its shellac counterparts. Now on to some examples of the problems I incurred while restoring these historic recordings. The 1937 Dallas sessions were plagued with a very pronounced hum that needed to be removed. That wasn't much of a problem. The offending hums were simply notched out with digital equalization using a very narrow bandwidth so as not to harm the lower frequencies. Here's the very end of Malted Milk recorded in Dallas. You will hear the hum and the residual clicks and pops that were still present in the transfer Steve Lasker sent me. Track two, please.
I have a warm old feeling and the hair rising on my head.
Did you notice the tentative volume pull in the guitar outro? Apparently, the engineer began to turn down the volume before Johnson had finished playing, and then quickly restored the level. When I consulted with Stephen, he urged me to fix it. At this point, let me explain what had to be done to basically semi-processed files that I was dealing with. Using the background CD crackle plugin in my Sadie disc editor, I processed each sound file twice through that module. Then I started to build an equalization palette in the editor's mixing strip to reshape the noise floor of each recording session and to remove some low-end warping noises, hum, and some mid-range non-linearity. After that processing, I utilized what I call my lifeline, Cedar's plugin known as Retouch. Retouch was the result of several digital restoration programs that were used to restore old movies that had deteriorated. In audio files, retouch converts the signal into a visual representation that can be manipulated in order to remove such extraneous noises as coughs, subway rumble, car horns, bias noises, as well as scratches and any residual clicks and or pops that Cedar's background transient removal modules did not process. Of course, this is a very slow and arduous task that requires concentration, coordination, and experience, since every event has to be gated and removed manually. In order to quote-unquote fix the volume pull, I had to first restore the change in volume during that moment using Sadie's digital disc editor. Okay, with that problem solved, I had to address the resultant increase in broadband noise at that point. Through the miracle of retouch and about 20 minutes of labor, I was able to replace the offending increase in surface noise by cutting and pasting similar surface noise from an adjacent area. Here is the final result of that section, track 3.
I have a warm old feeling and the hair rising on my head.
There was only one side in the entire reissue that Stephen Lasker had not directly transferred. The published take of Traveling Riverside Blues, recorded on June 20, 1937 in Dallas. The only known copy of it resides at the Library of Congress, and I worked with a digital dub made by its audio lab. Here is the beginning of it as I had received it. Track 4, please.
If your man gets first and done, won't you have your fun? And get brazen enough, want to have your fun. Come on back to fried fun, mama, bail us all night long.
The overall sound is dull, compounded by low-level ticks, a few noticeable high-order clicks, and some rumble. Here is what it sounded like after the first pass of Decrackle. Track 5, please.
If your man get brazen down, won't you have your fun? If your man get brazen down, won't you have your fun? Come on back to fried fun, mama, bail us all night long.
As you can hear, some of the grittiness has begun to disappear. Now with the second pass of Decrackle. Track 6, please.
If your man get brazen down, won't you have your fun? If your man get brazen enough, won't you have your fun? Come on back to fried fun, mama, bail us all night long.
By this time, quite a bit of transient noise has been removed, along with some of the tracing distortion and wear on the loud passages. With the aid of retouch, I was able to remove the remaining clicks at the beginning and any residual crackle left behind. I also applied a series of equalization curves to the recording in order to make it sound comparable to the rest of the package. Track 7, please.
Won't you have your fun? If your man get brazen enough, won't you have your fun? Come on back to fried fun, mama, bail us all night long. I got women in Vicksburg, clean on into Tennessee.
All right, here's another example of a problem that without retouch would have never been corrected. The unpublished take one of Love and Vain Blues, also recorded in Dallas on June 20th, 1937. Here are two short excerpts from the original file I received. Track 8, please.
And I followed her to the station. Well, the blue light was my blue, and the red light was my mind. All my love's in vain. Willie Mae.
As you can hear, not only was there crackle present, but the vinyl pressing had an inherent swish in it, either due to faulty metal part processing or deterioration. Furthermore, when Johnson sings loudly, there's a nasty peak in the voice. This is what it sounded like after it had been decrackled. Track 9, please.
And I followed her to the station. Well, the blue light was my blue, and the red light was my mind. All my love's in vain. Willie Mae.
You'll notice something about that scratch at the end. That's the end of the disc. It's longer because of the fact that the linear speed of the disc is slowed down, so what has happened is there's more of a scratch area that the stylus is picking up. Now I began to work with retouch. Every one of those scratches had to be manually removed without affecting the signal. Keep in mind that there are 78 scratches per minute, and the selection is almost 2 minutes long. By readjusting certain parameters in retouch, I was also able to lessen some of the honkiness in the voice and loud sections. Here is the final version. By the way, Stephen Lasseter told me that of all the selections that I'd restored, this one pleased him the most. Yes, track 10, please.
And I followed her to the station with a suitcase in my hand. And I followed her to the station with a suitcase in my hand. Well, it's hard to tell, it's hard to tell, when all your love's in vain. All my love's in vain. When the train rolled up to the station, I looked her in the eye. When the train rolled up to the station, and I looked her in the eye. Well, I was lonesome, I felt so lonesome, and I could not help but cry. All my love's in vain. When the train, it left the station with two lights on behind. When the train, it left the station with two lights on behind. Well, the blue light was my blue, and the red light was my mind. All my love's in vain. Willie Mae. Willie Mae.
Next is my favorite track in the whole compilation. I think it's also Vinnie Pelote's. They're Red Hot. Remember, Vinnie, when we were playing that going down to MLA? You were really having a good time with that one. This was recorded on November 27, 36 in San Antonio. It's an up-tempo selection that displays Johnson's versatility in his use of two different voices throughout. Here's the beginning as I had originally received it. Track 11, please.
Got the mother than the red hot, yeah, she got 'em for sale. Got the mother than the red hot, yeah, she got 'em for sale. I got a good set, she's long and tall. She sleeps in the kitchen with a piece in the hall. Hot the mother than the red hot. Yeah, she got 'em for sale, I mean. Yeah, she got 'em for sale, yeah. Hot the mother than the red hot. Yeah, she got 'em for sale. Hot the mother than the red hot. Yeah, she got 'em for sale. She got 2 foot nickel, got 4 foot dime. Won't say more, but they ain't none of mine. Hot the mother than the red hot. Yeah, she got 'em for sale, I mean. Yes, she got 'em for sale, yes, yeah. Hot the mother than the red hot. Yes, she got 'em for sale. Hot the mother than the red hot.
And now the finished selection as it appears on the reissue. Retouch was invaluable in taming the nasty mid-range peaks in Robert Johnson's voice. Track 12, please.
Hot the mother than the red hot. Yes, she got 'em for sale. Hot the mother than the red hot, yeah, she got 'em for sale. I got a good set, she's long and tall. She sleeps in the kitchen with a piece in the hall. Hot the mother than the red hot, yeah, she got 'em for sale, I mean. Yeah, she got 'em for sale, yeah. Hot the mother than the red hot, yeah, she got 'em for sale. Hot the mother than the red hot, yeah, she got 'em for sale. She got 2 foot nickel, got 4 foot dime. Won't say more, but they ain't none of mine. Hot the mother than the red hot. Yeah, she got 'em for sale, I mean. Yeah, she got 'em for sale, yes, yeah. Hot the mother than the red hot. Yeah, she got 'em for sale. Hot the mother than the red hot. Yeah, she got 'em for sale. I got a letter from a girl in the room. Now she got some good she got to bring home soon. Now it's hot the mother than the red hot. Yeah, she got 'em for sale, I mean. Yeah, she got 'em for sale, yeah. Hot the mother than the red hot. Yeah, she got 'em for sale.
Before I continue, here are views of the covers of the previous issues of this material over the years. This is where it all started, the original 1961 issue engineered by Frank Driggs. Second volume, issued in 1970. Here is the first comprehensive reissue of all the known Robert Johnson recordings as produced in 1990. It won a Grammy that year and then was remastered in 1996. The producer of both was Larry Cohn, who also produced the 1994 Master Sound Gold Disc issue, which I'll show you in a moment. In a telephone conversation, Larry Cohn told me that the 1990 issue was the beginning of Sony's Roots and Blues Legacy series. It took a lot of convincing on his part to get the label executives to agree to allow it to be issued. Since 1973, there were legal problems with these recordings that prevented any chance of them ever being reissued. However, Cohn somehow found a way around the problem, and the rest is history. He told me that he used whatever surviving metal parts could be found, shellac pressings, and in a few instances, the original tape dubs that Frank Driggs had made for the LP reissues. I'm going to focus now on the 1994 reissue for a moment. Despite the fact that the notes for it say that the metal parts and pressings were used, Mr. Cohn stated to me that he used the Frank Driggs LP production tapes for the 1961 reissue in their entirety. What you're looking at now is the original label of 3220 Blues recorded on November 26, 1936 in San Antonio. Here is the beginning of that selection from the 1994 reissue. Track 13, please.
I sent for my baby and she don't come. I sent for my baby and she don't come.
Well, it reflects the technology available 50 years ago. It also sounds like it was processed with a limiter of some kind. Next is a new transfer of the same item from the existing metal part that was done last year by Steven Berkowitz, Mark Wilder, and Michael Brooks for the vinyl disc dubs included in the Centennial package. It's better, but it suffers from excessive noise reduction and a nasty mid-range peak in the voice. Track 14, please.
I sent for my baby, and she don't come. I sent for my baby, man, and she don't come. All the doctors and hot springs sure can't help her, no.
Finally, here is the complete transfer that Stephen Lasker transferred and I restored as it appears on the CD. Your handout has a printed transcript of what Robert Johnson is singing. Track 15, please.
I sent for my baby and she don't come. I sent for my baby and she don't come. All the doctors and hot springs sure can't help her, no. And if she gets unrooted, things she don't want to. If she gets unrooted, things she don't want to. Take my 3229, cut her half in two. She got a 30 special, but I believe it's most too light. Got a 30 special, but I believe it's most too late. I got a 3220, got to make the camps all right. I sent for my baby man and she don't come. I sent for my baby man and she don't come. All the doctors and hot springs sure can't help her, no. I'm gonna shoot my pistol, gonna shoot my Gatling gun. I'm gonna shoot my pistol, got to shoot my Gatling gun. You made me love you, now your man have come. Oh, baby, why you stay last night? Ah, baby, why you stay last night? You got your hair all tangled and you ain't talking right. Her 30 special boys hit do very well. Her 30 special boys hit do very well. I got a 3229, hits a bun in. If I sent for my baby, man, and she don't come. If I sent for my baby, man, and she don't come. All the doctors in Wisconsin sure can't help her, no. Hey, baby, why you stay last night? Hey, baby, why you stay last night? You didn't come home until the sun was shining bright. Ah, boys, I just can't take my rest. Ah, boys, I just can't take my rest. With this 3220 laying up and down my breast.
Okay, on to the final selection. Here's another comparison. Hellhound on My Trail, recorded at the same last session in June of 1937 in Dallas. First is a gold disc issue from 1994 utilizing the 1961 tapes. Track 16, please. Better. It's better than the 3220 blues selection earlier, but it's pretty opaque and honky. According to what Ed Camara, the noted blues expert on the subject, was told by Michael Brooks, the source for the vinyl dub was from the same 1961 tape. Here it is, track 17.
I got to keep moving, is down a kill.
They sound pretty similar. Now, here is the complete selection as Stephen and I had restored it for the centennial issue. Listen carefully at the beginning, and you will hear a grace note, technically an accacciatura, that precedes the starting note. It was excised from the previous two examples. The source that we used is from a set of vinyl pressings that once belonged to record executive John Hammond. All the vinyl pressings used in this set came from that group. The lyrics are printed on your handout. Track 18, please.
I got to keep moving, I got to keep moving. Blues falling down like hail, blues falling down like hail. Blues falling down like hail, blues falling down like hail. And the day keeps on wearing me. There's a hellhound on my trails, hellhound on my trail, hellhound on my trail. If the day was Christmas Eve, if the day was Christmas Eve, and tomorrow was Christmas Day, if the day was Christmas Eve, and tomorrow was Christmas Day, oh, wouldn't we have a time, baby? Or I would need my little sweet rider just to pass the time away. Oh, to pass the time away. You spank on hot foot bottom around my door, all around my door. You spank on hot foot bottom around your daddy door. It keeps me with a rambling mind right on. Every old place I go, every old place I go. I can tell the wind is rising, the leaves trembling on the tree, trembling on the tree. I can tell the wind is rising, leaves trembling on a tree. All I need, my little sweet woman, and to keep my company. My company.
In conclusion, it was a great honor to be involved in the remastering of this important release. Thanks to Stephen Lasker for his faith in me, Stephen Levere for insisting that our remasterings remain unaltered when issued on CD, to Ed Kamara for his research assistance and comprehensive knowledge of the subject, Larry Cohn for his input concerning the portion he was involved with, and to Al Lisitsky and Dennis D. Rooney for their assistance in preparing this presentation. For those of you interested in learning more about Robert Johnson, you can consult Ed Kamara's writings on the subject, which are listed on the slide and on your handout on the back sheet. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks again to Seth and to Chuck. We've got a few minutes for questions, about 5 minutes before we take a break, because we've got a hellhound on our tail. So so we'll take some questions from the audience. Yeah.
Chuck, on that first disc that you showed, what's the base material? Is it steel? Is it aluminum?
I don't know. I've seen the disc, but it's been a long time ago. Steve Simoleon transferred it. If he's here, he can tell you.
Because it's 1937, no. Yeah. 39 or 40, it would depend on whether it's aluminum or steel.
I think it's probably the 39 or 40 would be my guess.
It was, okay, so was it lightweight aluminum or heavy aluminum? As a home protector.
recording disc that makes a big difference of trying to figure out what date it came out. Because I really think 1940 is a closer date.
Yeah, I think so too. Just simply because it has Body and Soul on it, you know, that was a big hit for Coleman Hawkins.
Yeah.
And he, that's where he picked up on it, I'm sure of that.
Yeah, the 37 Impossible, 39 Doubtful, I like 40.
Yeah, Carol Jenkins had it mounted on his wall for many years, and it said Property of Carol Jenkins on it. And his son's carried on that tradition. He's not willing to bring it in and let us transfer it, unfortunately.
Yeah, having the disc makes it easier to date.
Oh, yeah.
Than just having the sound.
Oh, yeah.
Seth, on the human voice, how do you make the distinction between what is an imperfection on the recording or the playback technology and what is actually an imperfection in the timbre of the voice itself as originally projected? And isn't there always a temptation to want to recreate that voice to 2013 standards of what is it of what we expect that voice to be?
Well, what you've heard is essentially a combination of worn discs, some tracing distortion, and also nonlinearity in the recording system itself. He was very close to the microphone, which caused a certain amount of nonlinearity in the actual cutting of that disc. So you have to use judgment. And I have already heard a lot of things of this kind of material, of also orchestral material, piano material, that when something goes, when a frequency really goes out of whack, you can tell it right away. So everything I did there was a judgment. Now remember, I sit there and do these things, and then I come back to it 3 days later. I just walk away from things, and then we'll start playing it again, cold. And if I like what I hear, coming back to it 3 or 4 days later, when I'm not accustomed, you know, my ears are not tired from it, and I don't hear any of that nonlinearity, then I know I think I've got it right. Everything is a judgment call. And Levere, who was the expert, said what I did was pretty much miraculous with what they had to work with. You know, none of these discs were in pristine shape, as you can hear. So I hope that answers the question.
On the first record that was on the first slide, the Honey and Body, I think it was called.
Yeah.
It says on the label, part one. Is there a second part?
I was talking to Steve about this last night, and we suspect there was a second part to it.
Side two.
Yeah, there's side two, yeah.
And I think there was a side three and maybe four.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd been kicked around. Carol got it from Addy, and you know, it's left like a fragment. You know, it's just a little slice of his genius. I saw the disc a number of years ago, and I've heard the original disc. What I'm working with is a reissue that's commonly circulated. And it's Carol's son keeps it in a vault here, and we can carried it and took it to Steve, and Steve made a transfer for him, but he's not into sharing it. It would be interesting to approach it, because that's obviously using earlier technology. And it would be interesting turning the few engineers here in this room loose on it to see what could really be done with it, you know.
Chuck, a similar question on the J. McShann Howard disc that you showed. I noticed there's a number 7 on one side and number 8 on the other. Does that indicate maybe some previous selections recorded that day? You have any idea about that?
It could very well. Unfortunately, that's the only surviving one. John suffered from a dementia. And later in life, and his son, he caught him throwing all that stuff in a trash bin, and he went and retrieved it.
Perhaps one last question.
This is for Seth. Did you mention the D-Crackle program that you're using?
Yeah, Cedar.
Cedar, okay, thank you.
All right, thanks again, and many thanks to our presenters. And we'll be back at 10:45. Thanks very much.